and welcome to hashtag book squad goals. That's the introduction. I did a very good job, and thank you to everyone for letting me just go for it and not even try.
It was good. It was good.
You did such
a yeah. It was better than any of us could have done.
I'm so proud of you. That was Kelly, everyone. Good job, me. Kelly. Yay.
Thank you. Okay. Okay, so this is our first episode, not counting the first episode that we recorded that was, like, worse than this one is hopefully going to be.
That one will be a deep cut that we release later.
Yes. Yeah, for, like, our diehard
after,
fans.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100th anniversary episode. Like, yes. Look how bad it could be, guys.
This is what you could have had.
It's just Emily's cough drop.
Yeah. Just me sucking on a cough drop.
I'm on a Bluetooth mic. It sounds like I'm calling in from the Middle East.
Hey, speaking of the Middle East.
Hey.
Excellent segue. No, we have to introduce everyone else.
Oh, okay.
This is the first episode.
Speaking of the Middle East, let's introduce ourselves.
I'm Kelly, obviously, since we said that already. And I'm a graphic designer. I work in publishing. I'm reading off of a Google Doc right now because I don't know anything about myself.
Way to give it away, Kelly.
Sorry. There's a fucking ant on my desk. Well, I tried to capture it, and instead I let it go, and so now it's alive somewhere.
Okay, so I am Emily. I'm going to read off of my thing, too. Okay, so it says... This thing that I wrote says that I am mother of cats, unicorn enthusiast. I am currently studying for my PhD in creative writing, which I know sounds fake, but it isn't. Yeah. I am drinking water.
Wonderful.
Thank you. I guess I will go.
Go.
Yes.
I am also studying for my PhD in English at the same...
Wait, who are you?
Oh, I'm Mary.
Oh, okay.
It's me, Mary.
Okay.
I'm also studying for my PhD in English at the same university Emily is at, and the university where Susan is an alum, and Kelly has never been affiliated with this university. but I'm focusing on children's literature and disability studies, which does sound like a thing to everyone but academics.
It sounds like a thing to me.
And in my spare times... I play and run Dungeons & Dragons games, because I'm a huge nerd.
And occasionally Call of Cthulhu.
And occasionally Call of Cthulhu.
I don't know what that word, what are those words?
It's a game based on H.P. Lovecraft's novels, or short stories.
Oh, actually that sounds like something I would be into. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I'm Susan, and I... have a PhD from the same university that Emily and Mary currently go to. I'm not using my PhD in any way, nor do I plan to. My loans are about to start being paid off, though.
Yeah.
No reason. I work in advertising as a copywriter. It has nothing to do with poetry at all. So
it's writing.
No, it's adjacent. But it's not... I didn't need a PhD to do this. That's all I'm saying. But they were nice enough to give me a nameplate that says doctor in front of it, which makes me kind of feel like an a-hole.
Oh.
Doc Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they actually gave me two. One says Doc Brown and one has, like, my full name, doctor. And, yeah, I'm really self-conscious about it at work.
Aw. Cool.
It's okay.
That's us.
That's everyone. All right. So does Susan want to introduce the book that we read? Oh, and I should also say, just going forward on this podcast, we're going to be spoiling literally everything, because how can you talk about a book without spoiling things? So
yeah. Mm-hmm. So there won't be spoiler alerts throughout, because this whole thing is spoilers.
Yeah. So if you don't want that, just stop.
Or save it for later.
Actually, you should have read the book along with us. Ideally, that's how it will work once this gets going. Okay, so we read Here I Am by Jonathan Safran Thor, and a quick little synopsis. It focuses on several key events all happening more or less around the same time. There's the crumbling of a marriage, the impending bar mitzvah of one of the children in the family, a devastating earthquake in Israel, and then war in the Middle East breaks out, and there's a fight for Israel as the Jewish home. There is a suicide amongst all this as well, and then there's a family dog who's dying and eventually dead. All of these events involve loss, and as a byproduct of that loss, some existential crises or near crises. Also at the center of the book is what it means to be Jewish and what Israel means to American Jews. When Israel's crumbling, whose job is it to protect it? What can be done? When a marriage and a family are falling apart, what can be done then?
Yeah. That sums it up. That sums it up really well, I think.
Key questions.
Well, I mean, it's a 500-page novel, so that's a good succinct summary.
Yeah, it's a big old book.
Yeah, it's long as fuck. It is heavy.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Susan. It's,
yeah, well, I didn't know how big it actually was when I chose it. I had only seen a picture of the cover on the internet, and it looked fine.
So. It's a lovely cover, it
is.
I will say.
It is.
But yeah, I was like carrying, my commute is like 45 minutes and I'm like carrying this giant book in my bag and I'm just like, never again.
Like she goes to NYU. She's a student, a lit student.
Yeah, I'm an undergrad. I'm not though. But,
you could pass for one.
Oh, thanks. So could anyone here probably. But, okay, so I guess, first of all, like, how did everyone feel about this book, Susan?
Well, first, I want to say why I chose it, because you asked me to say that earlier, I think. So this was, or this is, Thor's first book in 10 years. Yes. And the only other one of his I've read was Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, which I really did like, although I know that certain reviewers did not like it. Very much at all. Looking at you, Kakutani. Is that the name of the person I'm thinking
yeah.
of? Yeah.
Machiko.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not a fan. But I really enjoyed it. And was wanting to see over the past 10 years, you know, where he goes from there. But also I picked it for Jewish reasons because I am Jewish. I said I am a Jewish. People are like, no, you're not. That's not how people say that. I am Jewish and have really no affiliation with Israel at all, mostly because I'm a convert, but also just because I think most American Jews, especially living in the American South, don't really have much affiliation with Israel. So I was interested in that component of it as well. So there's my little cool why I picked it. But overall, I have positive feelings about it. It took me a really long time to finish it. We were supposed to record this about a million years ago, and I think I delayed it personally at least twice. But I finally made it 2 days ago. I finished it. I did enjoy it, though. Actually, I think I liked it more than Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, for whatever that is worth.
I have never read any of his other novels. I've tried to read Everything's Illuminated, but I think I was too young at the time, and I ended up just thinking, I don't get it, and putting it down.
I don't get it.
But I was so on board with this for about two-thirds of the novel. I was excited, and I felt like it reminded me of John Updike, but without the misogyny, like this really close portrait of a family and how...
I think there was a little bit of misogyny, but well, that's fine.
I had maybe not gotten to that yet.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But you know, it's just this like really close picture of an American family. I was interested in that. But then the last third, I got increasingly angry at Thor himself because I felt emotionally manipulative in a way. I don't know. We can talk about that later, but okay. So like
so good so 75% you feel good. Yeah. The first 75%.
But then when I finished it, immediately I went on Goodreads and just said 2 stars.
I hated it.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. Well, because I remember at the beginning of it, you were like, I can't put it down.
Yes.
I'm so into this. I love it. It's so good.
The ending really marred it for me.
So I overall feel positive about it, though I think that it has some problems, of course. But I'm like, and have been a huge fan of Jonathan Safran, though I haven't read Eating Animals. I did read Everything is Illuminated when I was in, like, I think, like, 12th grade or something. And then I read Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close when I was, like, in college, like, undergrad. And, like, I don't know, like, that's, like, a time when you read things and you're like, this right. is the book for me. Like, this book means everything. And that was, like, how I felt about his stuff. And the way that those books are written is a lot more... almost like both of those books have these like magical qualities to mm-hmm. them in certain ways. And like this book goes a lot further into like the realism, which I liked. It wasn't a problem for me, but I did like connect to it less because when I was going into reading it, I had these experiences of his other books and I was like, oh, hopefully it will be like those. And it's not really like them. It's pretty different. I felt, I like was pretty on board at the beginning and then somewhere in the middle, I was starting to feel like there's so much going on. All of this, like, I'm not sure that all of these pieces are connecting as well as I would like them to. And then the end actually really, like, brought it back for me. Like, by the last section, I guess, I felt like I was emotionally fulfilled by where it went. And, like, the last couple of pages, like, destroyed me forever, obviously, because
dog. It fulfilled you, but it didn't manipulate you.
Yeah, I didn't feel manipulated, though. Like, I rarely feel manipulated unless it's, like, so obviously manipulative. If it's just, like, something that's, like, designed to be emotional, then I'm like, all right, you know? But if it's, like, you know, if three members of the family had died and then the dog had also died, I would have been like, fuck you. But, you know, dogs die. Sorry. They do. Animals
no,
die.
No, mine aren't ever like, going to, though.
So, well, I mean, true. That dog probably should have died before the book even started. To be yeah. fair. That dog fair. Was struggling. Yeah. Struggling. I feel like now I just kind of like want to respond to things that you guys have said a little bit. So let me think about this. I kind of agree with Mary about the ending. And I feel like part of the problem is the scope of this book was so big that then it was like, how do you end this appropriately? So it kind of felt like one of those situations where it was like, he's not quite sure how to end this. I'm never on board with animals dying at all. I think Kelly and I had a really long talk about this, actually.
Argument.
Yes. a long talk. You know.
Because Emily doesn't like Inside Llewyn Davis.
There's cat cruelty fuck in her. It, you know? Okay. Anyway. Yes. Orange cat cruelty, Mary.
No.
Orange, yeah. Don't, yeah. Okay, anyway. So that's always really hard for me. And I know that that's just like a personal thing, but like it really, for me, if an animal is going to get hurt or killed in a story, even if that animal is like peeing all over the place,
and pooping,
peeing and pooping. Sounds
like only pooping, really.
Pooping.
There was
okay.
never
Sorry.
A complaint about
Excuse
his pee,
me.
Which was interesting. Like,
cause pee, yeah.
Pee is easier to clean, I guess.
Well, he was just like past that.
Yeah.
Like, it's worse if you can't control your poop for a dog.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, anyway. I mean, it's just got to feel like it's necessary for the story for me. And, like, I don't know that that was necessary for the story. It was just sort of, like, another thing. In response to your, I don't know what to call it, comment about magic, Kelly, I've never read any of his other work, so I don't really know what this is like compared to that. But I was thinking, like, maybe the magic in this book is like the tech speak and the like online like world and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That to me kind of read as like this parallel world where, I don't know, like it was like almost like a different storyline was happening. Even just like not just in the actual game. It's not a game, okay? You live it, you don't play it.
You don't play it.
But I mean, even just like when people were texting each other and stuff, it was sort of like this, I don't know, like almost like magical way of communicating. And I felt like those sections worked really well for me. And it wasn't just because I was like, oh, this is really easy to read. But I don't know. I just thought that they worked.
No, those definitely, I think, are the closest to what I felt about those other books. Like in the other books, the characters will have like prolonged conversations with like people that don't exist or ghosts or things like that, like engaging in like their things that they're thinking about but that aren't actually there. Yeah. And that seemed like close to that.
Yeah, when you say that, it makes me think specifically of Samantha.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, there's that moment where when Samantha dies, quote unquote.
yes.
Well, I guess she's like poisoned in the game or whatever.
From the bouquet of brutality.
But I mean, Sam has this moment where he's like really thinking about her as having separate consciousness and like, what did that feel like for her? And so like, I guess to me, that seems like sort of a similar thing. Maybe it's not though, because I haven't read
it's the closest.
Yeah
definitely.
So yeah, those are my thoughts. I have yet to read it on thoughts. Goodreads, so I don't have an official word yet on my
yeah opinion. I haven't rated it yet either. I think I'll probably give it like a— does Goodreads allow half stars?
No,
god damn it, that's so stupid.
Is it a 4-star or 5-star system?
Five.
Right? Wow, Mary, you like gave it a really low one.
Yeah, damn.
Two is low.
I was mad at the end, and I just immediately got on there. And what?
You shouldn't rate when you're angry.
I know.
Yeah, you gotta let it simmer. I'd probably, like, if I had the option, I'd give it 3.5. But if I'm gonna have to choose between 3 and 4, I'm gonna give it 3. That's how I feel.
I wish I could rate different parts of the book, different things, like different— there are certain storylines that would be like 4 or 5 stars for me for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then other storylines that I really just couldn't like care as much about. I don't know.
Half star.
Yeah. 0 stars for this storyline. I skimmed it. Yeah,
dislike.
Yeah. I don't know. Susan's mad at all of us now.
No, I'm not. I'm not like related to him or anything.
Susan's like, I'm not mad. I'm not mad.
I'm not mad. Let's see what happens when we read your book, though.
Okay. We do have to go back and talk about the worst book that Mary ever did.
Oh, no.
Because this— no.
I was hoping I could escape it.
All the dog death in the world and all the dog shitting in the house in the world can never hold a candle to the badness that was the couple next door.
I agree.
We can talk about this later. She gave this 2 stars, you guys.
Yeah, what would you have given the couple 0 next door? Negative 7?
I feel like maybe in the future we should come back and do like a mini-sode.
On the couple.
I would love to. I'm going to rip it apart.
Yes.
I would love that.
So if you really want to hate read something for a future mini-sode, our dear listeners, we're coming back to Couple Next Door. It's warning. It's fucking awful. And we all hate it.
It's also bad as an audiobook. It doesn't help it at all.
No, I don't think it would.
It's not even bad.
Unless you like very dramatic reading.
I know.
So I will say that I listened to some of the audiobook of this book, of Here I Am, and this guy is working overtime. Like, he's voicing a family of 5, plus grandparents, plus a great grandparent, plus like kids at school. Plus he reads, you know, the text messages in a different voice. So you can tell that they're, you know, not part of what's happening at the moment. Which at first, like, really threw me for a loop. I was like, what's happening? And
did he do, like, a robot voice? Was he like, hello, Samantha?
What are you? I'm talking about the dirty text between Jacob and...
Oh, no. He did it in sexy voice.
Well, he did it in, like a whisper, like it was, like, a this voice. To show me that that wasn't part of the actual conversation that was happening at the moment. But I definitely had to, like, I'm gonna go crack the book open and just take a gander at what's happening here, because what? But yeah, it was so many different voices for one person. I hope he got paid a lot to do that.
Like, unless this is Harry Potter, I don't want to hear your character voices. Like, seriously?
His old Jewish man like, character you better be- voice is, like, oh, no. It's like the, it's like Larry David playing Bernie Sanders.
Oh, no.
On SNL. Oh, it's like that voice. That's Irv's voice in the book.
I could see that.
So. I was hoping it would be like the grandpa from Rugrats. The Jewish grandpa.
But yeah, I was kind of amazed. I was like, I could actually keep track too. I mean, it's a man narrating, but like even I can keep track of what Julia's voice sounded like and who... In the kids, even, could tell them apart and everything. I was like, this guy's good. Yeah. But, wow. And he's got that old, you know, he could do a Larry David / Bernie Sanders understudy role if needed.
What is our discussion point? Susan, group leader.
Yeah, let me hit up the Google Doc. This is so much pressure on the first episode to be a leader. Emily, what are you doing in the Google Doc?
Okay. What? Did I do something?
Your I'm cursor just is just like just a bouncing everywhere. Around. Okay.
It's like your name and it just like, it's like this. Can you see me? Boop, 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 boop,
yeah. boop, boop, boop. I just.
I thought you were going to like delete my discussion points or something.
Yeah, calm I'm going to delete it.
Emily's taken over.
Okay.
Fuck you for picking this dog killing book. I'm deleting everything.
If I had known that, honestly, I probably wouldn't have picked it.
It's fine.
But I'd known it ended in dog euthanasia. I'm like,
oh. Let's be real. If it was a cat, Emily would be far more hateful right now.
I just don't feel like you should hold me personally responsible.
No,
for
no.
It.
I really don't. And that's why I didn't delete your stuff.
Thanks.
But just know, she is capable.
I'm not afraid of you. The first... theme or topic I wanted to talk about was existence and presence. Thinking of where here I am comes from, the phrase is Abraham's response to God in the Bible when he calls to him, which is talked about some in the book. In someone's bar mitzvah, was it Jacob's bar mitzvah, like when he was remembering it?
There were so many bar mitzvahs.
There were a lot of bar mitzvahs. I think we even got into Max's bar mitzvah like later, so... Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
But essentially, when God calls to Abraham, Abraham just says, here I am, doesn't question anything, it's just, he's here. So throughout the novel, there are other instances of characters either asserting or failing to assert their existence, which particularly, I think, applies to Jacob. So, questions I wrote for this, and anyone can jump in whenever. When and how do we see Jacob wrestling with his existence in his marriage, in Judaism, or elsewhere?
Constantly.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I really liked about the characterization of Jacob is that, like, he talks about how he's incapable of yelling or getting mad, and there's only two times in his life when he's ever yelled at anyone. And I'm just, and it, like, all of, like, the whole thing with Julia telling him, like, you know, I know that you didn't cheat on me because you literally couldn't because you're such a pussy. And he's like, just like his whole existence seems to revolve around the fact that he's, like, incapable of, like, making himself known or, like, asserting his feelings or being or doing the things that he wants to do. He just, like, he, like, fantasizes and he thinks about these things and then he just sits there and does nothing.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's not just existence, I think. It's a particular sort of existence, because technically Jacob's existing. They're all existing and just moving along. But he seems invested in, like, this particular type of manhood. I mean, they're talking about it when Sam is going to have a bar mitzvah and how he suddenly seems more responsible, and so he's a man now. And during that section, Sam really is getting stuff done and being proactive, and we don't see Jacob get anything done through the entire novel.
He can't even write a stupid TV show.
I've got to be honest. When he started talking about the TV show, about his family, and how it was his life's work, I just thought, no.
Yeah, it sounded stupid. Sorry.
Well, I never for a second believed it was going to become anything.
Yeah.
Which is what's kind of sad about everything Jacob does.
Yes. It's like, also,
I mean, I didn't think he was really going to Israel, even after preparing all this stuff to do it. Like, he said he talked to a lawyer, and he was, like, saying goodbye, but he was never really going to go. He just wanted someone to tell him
not
that they
go.
Wanted him to stay. But no one ever said that either. So at the end, he just didn't. But, well, all right. But someone thought he went, that lady in IKEA.
Oh, yeah.
Even though his name wasn't even listed on the thing when he, like, went to check.
Right, which is, like, even sadder, kind of. Like,
yeah.
He lied about it in that instance. Like, yeah, I was there. I answered the call. And, no, you are no Abraham.
There are, like, several points throughout the novel where he, like, lies or pretends to do something. Like, when the whole thing about the sign language.
That was bizarre.
What?
It's really bizarre.
So, but I kind of loved it. Like, I loved that about him.
Yeah.
Like, that was such an interesting part of his character, but it was also, I mean, it was super fucking weird, obviously.
So I guess for those who haven't listened or who haven't read, Jacob, the main character who can't do anything, somehow learns sign language, teaches himself sign language, goes in secret to conventions of deaf people and talks to them in sign language. And he tells no one, not his wife,
and
not his kids.
At the conventions, says that he has a deaf child, and that is why he has learned sign language and why he is at
That's
the convention.
That's really messed up.
It's fucked up. Like, what are you doing, dude? He's like, he is deeply disturbed.
But why does he do that? Like, I don't know what the answer to that is, because I'm not sure how it makes him feel. It's like everything he does is kind of in an effort to make him feel important or needed somehow, and I don't really know how that accomplishes.
Well, it does accomplish it, because if you go to one of these gatherings and you say, oh, my child is deaf, I've learned sign language so I can better communicate with my child. It makes you look like an awesome, understanding parent, I guess. And, like, you're really proactive and trying to...
Which he's, like, totally not as an actor.
No, he's not. He's he's around.
Yeah, he's like, you want to hear a penis joke? I got one.
And his kids are like, yeah, we all decided who we're going to live with. It's mom.
And mom's like, yeah, of course it was me. Well, and he lied about, another thing he lied about was sleeping with, whether or not he slept with the woman he was texting. Right. When he first said it to Tamir, when he first said yes, that he slept with her, I was like, oh my gosh, he did.
Yeah, I was excited
and then, you know,
for him.
5 minutes later, he's like, "Oh, I made that up. I really did it." And I was like,
yeah,
"Oh my gosh, he actually did not!" Like, Julia was right. That whole that speech by Julia is awesome.
I love Julia.
That was like my favorite piece of dialogue from the whole thing was that argument where she was like, "If you were ever faced with someone's actual asshole,
yes,
actually in front of your face, there's no way."
Those text messages were so graphic.
Oh my god. Like, I was reading it on the train, and I was telling you guys this, that, like, I was just, like, you sit so close to people, and I'm just, like, holding the book, like, really, like, almost closed while I'm reading it so that people can't just, like, look over and see. Because it's also, like, they're spaced out, like, on their own line and italicized. And italics. So it's just, like, this says something about common assholes. Please look at it, like, to anyone sitting near you.
I can just imagine this was a lot for you to read, Mary.
Oh, yeah.
Because
I'm kind of a prude.
Because you're a prude.
Are you?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I knew this about you.
Okay, so just as an example, we read Dark Matter.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Mary, as always, was ahead of me in it because she reads faster than I do. And she was like, oh, this book, so much sex in it, and it's just, like, graphic, and there's so much, and I was like, all right, and then I read it, and I was like, no.
I think to my credit, though, science fiction typically doesn't have a lot of sex in it. Maybe. I don't know.
Okay, now that I read Dark Matter also, and I only remember one instance of sex, and it was pretty not graphic.
He just talks about being horny a lot.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Like a teenage boy. Which he's not.
So did Sam's horniness bother you when it was like that whole section about how he masturbates all the time?
Weirdly, no. I was really like, well, I guess he has like a pretty okay outlook on this, you know? Like he's not super ashamed.
Yeah, I feel like the sex in this book is and the masturbation segments are described with like a sort of clinical like realism where just oh my god, the part where he talks about how he would masturbate with like hair gel, I was like no, it was so horrible. But it was so like it was descriptive in a way that was not at all like flowery or because like the way that authors often write about sex is like so like romanticized, and this is just basically like I jerked
it's
off
clinical.
Using hair gel. Yeah.
and he would report, like, I tried to use this and it didn't work, so I moved on to... I mean, it's almost like a scientific method.
Yeah.
Is there a way to write about masturbation romantically?
Maybe. I guess the way to write about masturbation romantically is to not write about masturbation.
You know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, I think the closest this book comes to describing masturbation romantically is when there's that part where he's like remembering masturbating.
Oh yeah, with his cousin.
Yeah.
Yeah, with his cousin.
Tamir.
And
this is Jacob. Jacob's like, remembering.
Yeah, Jake, I'm sorry. Where Jacob is remembering masturbating with Tamir like next to him. And thinking about whether his moans were, like, embellished. And, I mean, like, not that that's romantic, but it's a little less clinical because there's some sort of, like, emotion attached to that. Like, what does it mean that we're having this, like, communal masturbation?
Yeah, and I think because there's another person there.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, like, I can think of songs that kind of romantically talk about masturbation.
Really?
Yeah, like... For us. If you haven't listened to, I can't remember the name of the song. It's Lizzo.
22 by Taylor Swift.
No. It's Lizzo. It's Lizzo.
Is that song about masturbation?
And it's called, I think it's called.
I'm going to listen to it differently just because you said that. There's no evidence.
I think it's called Feel Myself. And it's talking about like, oh, I walked by the mirror and I looked at myself and I think I'm looking really good tonight. So excuse me while I feel myself. And like, I guess you could take it as like, ooh, I'm feeling myself. I'm going to dance. But anyway, I don't know.
I can see that.
Whatever. It's good. It's a good song and everyone should listen to it. I think we got away from the question.
What was Are we still
yeah,
talking
about
identity?
But now we're talking about assholes.
I mean, they're connected,
so,
right?
Other characters that also experience that same kind of crisis of identity or asserting their presence or existence.
I mean, definitely Sam.
Yeah.
who has a literal...
Yeah, Mary, you kind of wanted to talk about the gender identity issue with Sam,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so Sam plays or lives this game called An Other Life, right? Second Life is a real game.
Yeah, this one's called Other Life.
So Other Life is like the slight wink.
I swear, as I was reading it, I read it as Second Life every time.
Yeah, so...
But okay.
So Sam plays this game called Other Life, and his avatar is a young woman, Hispanic woman.
A Hispanic woman, yeah.
And at first, I thought, we're going to get this storyline where Sam is going to come out as transgender. This is going to be like the real representation of himself. But then later, he chooses, once his avatar Samantha dies, he chooses to have his new avatar look like an old man, like his dead great-grandfather. And it's so interesting because that's two opposite ends of the spectrum. Young woman, like young Hispanic woman, elderly Jewish man.
I was just going to say, I mean, it makes me think of like role playing, which like I have experience with mm-hmm. From my long and storied history of being a nerd. And like, you know, and the idea that like, because he is inhabiting this like body online or this like other identity. And at first you think like maybe this is his identity, but then you realize like he's just like playing out these different scenarios and playing these different people because he's just like, I guess he's just like curious about like being in the shoes of another character, so to speak. And like Samantha is like a character in a way.
Right. Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Well, she seems to be like the almost like mirror image of, or kind of the opposite side of, he's like heading toward this bar mitzvah he doesn't want to do, and she's having a bat mitzvah right. in Other Life. But it's like the speech that she gives is like, fuck this whole thing. I hate everything. I don't want to do this. And then she blows up a synagogue. So it's like all these things that he could never actually do, but she's like living on the other side of this wall and living it out and blowing shit up.
Yeah.
She's like, get it, girl.
Until her tragic death.
Right. Which was very anti-
That's such a dad thing to do, for a death. Like, right? Play this game for a minute. Oh, I killed your character.
I was like so nervous when that happened, and then it just like barely played out in any way. It was just like Sam was just like, ugh, whatever, and he like made a new. I thought it was going to be like a whole explosive fight, and like the family was going to fall apart because of that. And then it was just like, whatevs, which I thought was interesting because that was a direction it could have gone in, but it didn't.
The biggest explosive fight with that was him with the like customer service representative.
That was like my favorite thing. It was such a realistic conversation that you have with a customer service representative where they're like still preaching to you like the like tagline of the game while you're trying to get money back. And they're like, it's not a game. And he's like, okay, but, and then they're like, but sir, I don't think you understand.
It's not a game. You don't play it. You live it.
You live it.
Unless you have several hundreds of thousands of dollars.
$1,200?
Oh, wait, was it $1,200?
Yeah.
Okay, it wasn't as much as I thought.
I mean, that's still ridiculous.
Yeah. And he was like, I can't pay it. I'll have to work forever. And I'm like, you're fucking rich, dude. Like, you work for HBO.
For apparently a shitty show, though, according to, like, his whole family.
I had trouble believing that, honestly. Yeah. I was like, I bet that show's pretty good. I bet I watched it.
I feel like they were referencing that it was, like, a Game of Thrones-esque show.
Yes.
Yeah. Didn't they talk about dragons or something mm-hmm. like that?
I mean, if a show
sounds way better to me.
If a show is bad, HBO cancels it.
So once he becomes, once Sam's avatar is like his great-grandfather, then he runs into his cousin inside the game, the not game.
The life.
And he's like a, Well, that's when I didn't realize that your avatars could be
anything.
So, something so outside the realm of human, like because Sam was Sam. Mantha,
but cousin gnome.
I was just like, oh, they're just types of people. Yeah, he was like a rainbow lion thing, and I was like, wow.
Yeah, I was like, why would you choose to be a human if you could be like a cool ass animal?
Yeah, that makes me wonder even more why he chose to be just a Latina girl.
Yeah,
doing the same things that he's doing in his real life.
I mean, I have this grand theory. Playing D&D and running D&D, that every time someone makes a character, even if it seems like the complete opposite of them, is really just like some shade of them.
So my bearded dwarf,
yes,
my bearded lady dwarf is me,
yes, in a way.
Interesting.
In a way, not like, physically, but
it's a shade of you.
Well, like, I play...
And does that mean that Doral is my husband? Okay, so let me tell you about my character real fast. So I'm a bearded lady dwarf, and my husband, Doral, is a sorcerer. Yes, his name is Doral.
Sounds like a deadbeat.
Well, he's a really great sorcerer, except for the fact that he accidentally turned himself into a falcon, and then he got his wings clipped and got really fat. So he can't do magic, and he just kind of, like, hobbles around everywhere. And so now I'm like, is that Ben?
I mean, my example is, so, like, I play men a lot when I play D&D, and I might start out thinking, like, I'm going to be, like, what I would think is a stereotypical man and be super macho and
hit on dudely. Bar maidens.
Yeah,
or
like, hit dudely. On all these wenches in the bar or whatever. But then it always ends up to, like, I become some emotional wreck. And become, like, codependent on other people in the party.
Exactly, a stereotype of a typical man.
So I, like...
They're always ruining parties with their emotions.
Yeah, I am. Like, there was one time where this 15-year-old who plays with us looked at me and said, can you calm down?
Was it a dude?
Yeah.
This
15-year-old boy.
Nothing pisses me off more than when a guy tells me to calm down. You should have slapped him.
No, he's a nice kid, but he was just like, can you please calm down?
Oh my God.
You're getting very emotional. Like,
don't you tell me to calm down.
I would be like, I'll calm you down by killing you. Then you'll be real calm because you'll be dead.
Mm-hmm. But that's like... I mean, everyone makes characters that are sort of like themselves in a way, even if initially it doesn't seem like it. So, Samantha and whatever his...
Leader. Isaac, right? Doesn't he just name him after his grandfather? Yeah, or his great-grandfather?
So.
What was the lion's name?
I don't know.
It's part of themselves, even if it doesn't seem like it.
Yeah.
I agree with that theory.
Well, that made me think Gnome was, like, so interesting, and I would like to know more about him, but...
I love Gnome.
There's too many things going on if we throw in more of his actual life than we got, but... So then why do we think Jacob wanted to, like, check out the game?
I don't know.
Because he's a douchebag.
Well, I mean, he's losing, in a sense, he's, like, losing Sam to this game, because instead of interacting with people, or what Jacob would perceive as real people, he's just playing this game on an iPad.
Well, also, like, Sam shares, like, more of himself, like, his actual self with the people in this game, or not game, and, like, the experience of it than he does with his parents anymore, because he's reached, like, teenage years where he's like, I don't want to talk to you, I'm not telling you anything. So maybe Jacob thought he could get some kind of, like, look into his teenage son's mind by, like, going on this thing, and maybe it would help him understand him better.
Not true, Jacob.
Yeah, I kind of wondered if he also, like, for himself, just wanted to... become something else for a while.
Like, but he can't even do that. Deaf convention.
Shit's really fallen apart by that point.
But like, Jacob can't even become a fake person.
He immediately dies. He
just died. Shit's real bad for him at that
point. Yeah.
Yeah, like, who just eats a random plant?
He doesn't eat it.
He just smells it, right? Yeah.
Which is a silly thing to do as an avatar in a game because you can't smell it.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
I mean, to be honest, though, the game sounded so complicated. Because it sounded straightforward, but just having played a lot of games before, I think it would be hard to play. It would have so many different controls since you can do essentially anything.
Yeah.
It's very unlikely he just, like, picked it up and was like, I know how to smell this flower. He'd probably be like, how do I walk?
Yeah, I wonder if, like, it was the sort of thing where you, like, walk forward and then it's like, would you like to smell this bouquet? And then you select, yes or no or something.
This bouquet of fatality.
Yeah.
So should we move on to the next talking point?
Yes.
Because, you know, I don't... I feel like maybe we should... keep this under 2 hours.
Oh god, how long have we? Okay, I'm switching. Oh yeah, we've already done 50 minutes.
No,
so
yeah,
well, some it's of already, that was yeah. just chat.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh damn. Okay.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm just trying to get us back on track a little bit. Not that smelling the plants is
Emily's
important.
Bored and she hates us.
Okay. Well, I do want to talk about this next one. So
yes,
yeah. Before I read this book, I was talking to our friend Matthew, who also has cool cats, about the novel, because he'd already read it. And we both read Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close in the same class together, so we talked a lot about that before. But I was looking back through those text messages, and he said that Foer seems to need a disaster, either human or natural, to provide the spark for his conflict. So Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close had 9/11, and Everything is Illuminated had the Shoah, or the Holocaust. And then, of course, this one had the earthquake in Israel as the major disaster. And so my question then to you is, to what extent do you think the novel relies on that disaster to push the other conflicts forward? Or do you see that disaster as even being the main disaster?
Personally, I don't see it as being the main disaster. And I honestly feel like this book could have survived without having that part at all. And, like... that whole part felt so separate to me, and, like, that was really the thing that kept me feeling so distant from this book, and not just because I'm a fucking idiot and I don't know anything about the conflict going on over there. No, I mean, I thought it was interesting at first to imagine, like, this, you know, disaster scenario, but then it just sort of, like, disconnected in this way, and I see how it's supposed to tie together his Jewish identity and his differences with his cousin and sort and like, you know, the whole conflict that he has with Tamir about like being like in your home, like, is Israel your home? Mm-hmm. Are you truly Jewish? Like, that sort of thing. But I feel like those things could have been the same. They could have had the same effect and impact had there not been this whole side storyline. Like, there's this whole part that's like a whole section where it's just like explaining what happens and like the diplomacy going back and forth, and I was just like, this is so irrelevant to like the part of the story that like we have been reading up to this point. It just seemed like a total branch off, and I like didn't get it, and I did not like it, and I would have liked the book so much more if it hadn't been for this whole section, though I did still like the book ultimately.
Yeah, to me, I feel like the real disaster, quote-unquote disaster, in this book would be the divorce.
Yeah.
Because it seems like everything hinges on that. Even, like, before the divorce is really a thing, everyone kind of, like, knows that it's impending.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, even the kids are talking about it from the very beginning.
Maybe especially the kids.
Yeah, especially the kids are talking. Like, the kids know it more than the parents know it. But that sort of seems like the real, to me, the real, like, disaster of the book, that the book sort of depends on. And I guess, like, maybe that's not big enough to really call a disaster. But, yeah, the earthquake stuff, to me, that would be the part of the book that I would give fewer stars on Goodreads if I could rate per section.
While I didn't think, like, wow, I'm really enjoying this earthquake stuff, which I don't think is how you're supposed to feel about it anyway, but I didn't think that, but at the same time, if the earthquake doesn't happen, we don't get an extended visit from cousin Tamir. Mm-hmm. We don't get these, like, real questions about if it's possible for Jacob as an American Jewish man to feel any connection to Israel, which I don't know. I don't know that it is. And I was trying to think, like, me being a little separated from this issue, like, I was raised Southern Baptist and they're just kind of, you know, doing their thing. And we don't have, like, this big international, like, homeland or whatever, you know? And so I was trying to think, like, what would I feel like? If you've never been connected to a country, why would you feel like it's part of your home? I don't know. It was interesting. It was interesting to think about. And I think that the earthquake helps frame that in a way that's easier to understand or, like, illustrate.
I think for a lot of Jews, though, who are really loyal to Israel or connected to it, it feels like the only place in the world that they have that is for them only, or supposed to be, in their minds. I don't have a dog in this
podcast. Right, no, I know.
I'm not throwing out opinions on this conflict, but for the wall to fall,
that's a big deal.
Would be really devastating, like, on a symbolic level, first of all, and then also just, it would feel like, well, we have no way to protect this place.
Right.
That seems to be the only place that they have left, again, for some people. And I don't know what I would feel like if that happened, but it would be scary because I know for sure a lot of Jews would die if it happened.
Yes, that's true.
As would a lot of whoever else is coming in to try to take it.
Just a lot of death,
Palestinians,
period.
Would also, yeah. But, I mean, it's contentious enough as it is, but for the wall to come down, I don't know, like, that was the part where I actually did get really interested in the earthquake, was once that happened, because I was like, oh shit, like, Israel is not gonna, it might not even exist after this, which would be a very major crisis for Jews everywhere, because where they would be displaced.
Right.
I don't know. Jacob, though, still doesn't seem to do much, though, you know, in any way about it.
That's the thing, is it seems like that's, like, a separate story that could have been more interesting were there a different character dealing with it. But, like, Jacob's reaction to the whole thing is just kind of, like, he doesn't feel like it's really a part of his own story, and thus it seems kind of out of place. Because then he's also dealing with this whole divorce situation, and the suicide, and all there's, like, so much going on.
Well, he didn't seem to feel like it was part of his life or his duty to go there until the divorce was really happening, and they were actually, like, sleeping in separate places, and he didn't really know where she was, and then all of a sudden it was like, I have a job to do, and I must go. And so I think it is, I guess, connected to, like, where he is in the divorce at the time, but then he doesn't actually go.
It was almost like he was using it. I mean, it was definitely that he was using it as a way to, like, escape what was going on in his marriage, and then also hoping that the possibility of him going to war would make Julia see that they should work out their marriage, and she should beg him to come back, because he literally asks her, like, 10 times, like, can you please just tell me not to go? And she's like, what do you want from me? And he's like, tell me to stay here. And she's like, I can't right now, Jacob. Like, I'm trying to work on my house.
It's the same reaction she has when she's like, if someone's actual asshole is in front of you, you wouldn't do it. She's basically like, yeah, you can be at an airport.
Yeah.
I mean,
staring down the metaphorical asshole, and you're still not going to fuck it.
Julia has the opportunity to have an affair, and she doesn't.
I mean, don't they have sex?
Did they?
I thought they just kissed.
I think they just kissed.
Oh, I thought they had sex.
Which, like, she didn't seem like she enjoyed, really. It was just kind of like, yeah, I did it, but...
Yeah. Well...
I don't know.
I don't think her specific desire was to have an affair, though.
Right.
Because she wasn't leaving the marriage because she felt something for another person. It was just because she didn't want to be with him, you know?
Yeah.
And then there was, like, a catalyst.
Because she felt like he wasn't there at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got to say, though, their co-parenting situation after the divorce is, like, really admirable.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, it seemed to be, like, a pretty smooth divorce after the part that happens during an earthquake and a suicide, like, once that all's over.
Yeah, I mean, like
no Jacob one went to goes Israel to and Julia's everything's fine.
Remarriage wedding.
I also like how much Julia is just like your grandfather killed himself today, but we're still getting divorced. Also, there was a huge earthquake in Israel, and the world is falling apart. But just so you know, we're still getting a divorce because I hate you.
Also, this bar mitzvah is still on.
Yes.
It is happening.
And we're gonna have the decorations for the tables.
Don't get distracted. Fuck paper plates. I'm getting the real shit. This is a fancy bar mitzvah that we threw together 2 days ago.
In our kitchen.
And then Sam gives a ridiculous speech.
Yeah, that speech was a bit ridiculous. One thing, okay, I was reading a review today just for funsies about this book, and someone said that for, like, a decade or so that Forrest should be banned from having children narrate anything.
It's true, like, everything he does. Like,
if you've read Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, the whole thing is narrated by a very precocious, like, 9-year-old kid, and... It was like, can we put, like, a moratorium on the child narration for just for a while, like, make him stop doing it? And this speech was one of those moments where that might not have been, like, the worst thing. Also, I took a note on the worst sentence in the book.
Oh, no.
Because in general, I actually really thought the dialogue was pretty good, especially between Jacob and Julia, and even Irv and Jacob. Mm-hmm. I really liked their dynamic, too, but, this was a real sentence. Max plugged his speech orifice with a burrito.
Yes!
I had to stop everything I was doing and put that in my phone.
No one speaks that way.
Max plugged his speech orifice with a burrito.
Max took a bite of a burrito.
And stop talking.
Right? Trying to say.
Why? Also, no, it's like, someone edited this book and they were like,
well, okay, someone edited this book, but, you know, it's almost 600 pages long, so.
Yeah, they, like, skipped a chunk in the middle, worst that sentence. I think that feels like something he did to see if he could get away with it. That is a terrible sentence.
It's like a note to the editor. Like,
I have been thinking about it for a week. Like, this might that's be, how much that sentence bothers me.
This might be a stretch, but I'm feeling like some connections with buttholes there.
Plug.
Like, it's sort of like a reverse butthole.
Butt plug.
And, like, instead
a reverse butt plug.
Yes. No, well, I'm thinking, like, of pooping. And, like, so, like, instead of pooping to, like, and a burrito is kind of, like...
It has beans.
Well, I'm just saying, like, we're talking about the fascination with buttholes, and I feel like it's kind of, like, I don't know, like, putting food into a mouth, plugging it into an orifice, it's just kind of, like, got a, like, visually, it creates sort of, like, butthole imagery.
What happened just now?
I said it might be a stretch. I think saying it might be a stretch
is a pun.
Emily's blog post is going to be about the anal imagery, and here I am.
It's really not.
Butthole gazing.
Oh my god. Yeah. Okay, well, I wanted to say, because you marked your worst sentence, but I actually, I marked a lot of pages in this book with, like, things that I really liked. Like, and that's how I've always felt about Jonathan Safran Foer, is there are, like, there's, like, lots of, he says a decent amount of, like, stupid and annoying things. But then he says a lot of really, like, things that I think are really smart and sort of, like, sweet little, like, distillations of, like, things in life that are true that I don't really think about. Like, one of my favorite things is when he's talking about that when the kids get their school pictures taken and they're all faking their smiles or whatever, or trying to. And he says, they're wonderful smilers, the best, but they're the very worst fake smilers. The inability to fake a smile defines childhood. And I think that's, like, so interesting and smart, because it's so true. Like I could fake a smile in a second, like, easy. But, like, when you're a little kid and you see these kids in their pictures, like, with these ridiculous fake smiles, and it's like, when is another time when you, like, can't physically fake a smile, you know? Like, so, I don't know. I think there's a lot of, like wisdom throughout, even when there are plenty of parts that are, like, false wisdom that are stupid.
Miraculously, too, a lot of that wisdom in true Foer fashion is spoken or thought by one of the kids.
Yeah. Which, I do think that he, sometimes the kids are far too smart, but a lot of times the kids do respond in ways that I think are really realistic for how children, like, interpret information. Mm-hmm. Especially Benji, I think. Who is the youngest child in this book, is, like, a lot of the stuff that he responds to, and a lot of his fears, and he just has this, like, extreme fear of death, which is kind of, like, what I was like as a little kid, so I really, like, related to that, because I remember, like, I mean, I don't remember being that young, but I remember being, like, you know, 5, and, like, going to my parents' room at night and being like, I'm afraid of death, like, what happens? Is there nothingness? Please explain. And my parents were like,
but... Please go to sleep, Kelly.
Yeah.
They try to walk away, and you're like, but, Mom...
And then I would just lay in my bed and, like, stare at the ceiling. But that's conversation for another time. But anyway, this child is, like extremely anxious about that sort of thing. And then, like, everything that his parents say or do, or everything that his siblings say or do, he, like, takes that and he's like, how can I apply this to the things I'm afraid of? And I thought that was, like, a good... like, just representation of a little kid and having this, like, one-track thinking, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, anything else?
Do we want to talk Jewish stuff or nah?
I think you should talk your Jewish stuff.
Well, I don't want to just...
Talk your Jewish stuff.
Jewish stuff.
I guess I was interested in the moment that... I guess Tamir kind of talked Jacob into... feeling like he needed to go to Israel, but there's so many different, just within that one family, levels of Jewish experience and Jewish identity. Like, I don't think that, I guess I feel like Jacob sees himself as Jewish, but not in the religious sense. I don't think anyone in his immediate family is either, but Julia and his kids, I mean, but his dad is like, the most Jewish guy, and
his dad
is still on. I mean, he exists to tell everyone, like, how much everyone hates Jews.
Yes.
Apparently, in, like, very public forums, and at the expense of other races and religions.
I wanted to know more about that because I keep referencing that he, like, had some crazy offensive blog post.
And that, like, he goes on news shows, and I think he's probably talking about Palestinians is what it sounds like, or even maybe just Muslims in general. He doesn't seem like he has any plans to go to Israel.
No.
When any of this happens, and, like, he is ostensibly the most Jewish family member, and then there's Isaac, who just, you know, takes a quick exit. Like, he's like, the first sentence of the book is that he's deciding whether to move to Israel or kill himself. And, of course, Israel explodes, so he kills himself. But no one really ends up going, which I don't really know what that says about.
I mean, I guess Tamir goes, but Tamir lives in Israel.
He lives there, yeah. I don't know what it says about their Jewishness as a whole, and as a family, and or anything, really. So I don't know that I have anything wise to say about it. I was just interested in how each of them reacted in this situation. Like, Julia seemed to just sort of breeze by it all. And
oh, yeah.
Just focus on, like, getting the divorce going.
And the bar mitzvah.
But at the same time, like, the bar mitzvah is somehow so important, and yet they're only doing it, like, out of the tradition of having to do it, but no one really wants to do it for Jewish reasons.
So, I mean, that seems like it's kind of a theme, though, because I think Judaism is in, like, an interesting spot of being both, in a way, a religion and also, like, an ethnic culture, you know, like, it's a community mm-hmm. and also a religion. And so Jacob says multiple times he's agnostic and he doesn't really believe in God. And so, mm-hmm. but he still identifies as Jewish.
Yeah. Well, Judaism does not require, as a belief system, does not require a belief in God. So there are a lot of Jewish atheists who just identify as part of the community and part of the tribe, so to speak, but are not really there to worship anything, but somehow feel connected,
yeah,
I guess, culturally. But yeah, I mean, you don't have to, unlike Christianity, where, like, the defining thing is you believe in a certain thing.
And if you do not,
Judaism,
it is a
doesn't
problem.
Have that. Yeah. Right. Then you're not doing it right. Yeah, so Judaism doesn't have that. But he seems to talk really openly about that even to the kids.
Oh, yeah.
Especially, like, Benji is asking about death and stuff. It's just like, oh, yeah, well, if we believed in, like, angels in heaven and stuff, then, like, that's what would happen. But, you know, we don't. So it's like, well, he's not really even trying to comfort it at all. It's just like, eh. Which is maybe kind of a Jewish trait, actually. It's just like, hey, here's the shit.
Yeah.
Like, it's gonna suck. Sorry. There's no angels. Well, and the name Jacob, so, like, biblically speaking, Jacob is given that name after he wrestles with an angel. And then, like, his name becomes Israel. And
right.
Israel means to wrestle with God. And I think they actually talk about that in the book, but I can't remember because I'm getting it confused with, like, an actual thing I read about.
I'm pretty sure they do talk about it, yeah.
It's just interesting that his name is Jacob. And yet Israel seems to mean nothing, really. It's just a symbol of his kind of non-existence as a person in his own family.
Oh, man. He's a sad character.
He's such a sad character.
He is a sad character. He's a tragedy. He's a walking tragedy.
And I thought it was interesting, just the, like, brief allusion to what, like, his potential death of by, like, throat cancer or something. Like, I wonder if we were supposed to take that as, like, this is how he's going to die, because that's, like, the last, they mention it once, and that seems to be, like, the latest, like, furthest in time the story goes.
Yeah, I think that is how that's what I assumed, is that's how he's gonna go. And they're just gonna really casually talk about it probably up until the moment that he dies. And then they'll be like, well, I guess we have to have a funeral, like, sit Shiva, because that's what you do, but not because I really want to do it Jewishly.
I think that's kind of, like, I mean, it reminded me just of, like, speaking about Christianity, like, this concept that, like, people will just go to church on Easter and Christmas because they're supposed to. And then, but, like, why? Like, there are so many families, like, who consider themselves Christian or Catholic or whatever, who will go just on these very specific days to church just because that's what you do. And
it's habit.
Yeah, it's, like, really interesting to me because my family used to do that, and my family is, like, the least religious family, and yet we would still go to church on Christmas Eve for, like, the midnight service or whatever, and I'd be sitting there like, what, why are we here, like, what is this necessary?
I'm just imagining, like, Kelly as a child, but also kind of a grandma being like, it's midnight. I'm tired.
That's, like, me currently also. That's just, like, how I am. If it's like, 11:30, I'm like, why am I still awake?
Oh, yeah.
So, do we have any other thoughts? Last parting words? R.I.P. Argus?
Yeah. I think talking about it and processing the book a little bit has made me feel a bit better about it. Maybe I will
adjust your star rating.
Yeah.
Can I go back in and give it that third star?
I think it deserves a third star.
I'm doing it right now.
Yes.
Can I ask what you gave the couple for?
Sure. Let me see.
If it's more than two stars, I'm going to slap you in the face.
I gave it a one star.
Okay. I think I gave it one star also. Because you don't have the option.
You can't give it.
Yeah, no stars aren't an option.
Yeah.
It would
There's
get
a lot
no
of Amazon
stars.
Reviews that are like, I only pay one star because they won't let me put zero.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of stars and speaking of that... do you guys use Letterboxd?
I have before.
No, I mean, I have it, but I don't really use, I don't actively use
I've
it.
I've just been using it this year because I need to start keeping track of, like, what movies I watch for my sanity. And so, like, I rated, after I watched Grease 2, I rated Grease 2 a half star. And then I wrote, this is literally the worst movie I've ever seen in my entire life. And that was my review. And multiple people liked that review. Like, gave it, like, a thumbs up comment thing. And, like, I don't have any friends on Letterboxd, so these are, like, complete strangers.
You're Letterboxd famous.
I'm Letterboxd famous.
Did you ever listen to the How Did This Get Made
episode? I did. I listened to it yesterday in preparation for my blog post, which I'm going to write, about how much Grease 2 sucks. I can't decide the format that it's going to take. It might be, like, just, like, an overall, like, run-through of, like, everything that sucks. Just, like, a, like, scene by scene, this is terrible.
List.
Like, in order.
So, just to let our listeners know, we are going to have a blog.
We do have a blog.
Where we talk about, oh, yes, we have a blog where we talk about, you know, shit that we don't have time to talk about on our show, usually about TV shows and movies and other books and things like that. Maybe a couple of things about our pets will get thrown on there, as they do. But,
definitely pets.
So if you go check out the blog right now at our website, which is booksquad.ink.
I-N-K.
I-N-K, yeah, like ink.
Not incorporated. Inky.
No, we're not incorporated just yet, but we are a squad, officially. you will see, at this point, there should be two blog posts up there.
Mm-hmm.
I have written about Moana, which is my favorite Disney movie of all time.
So good.
So good. I sing it every day. but this isn't going to be a post just about, like, how much I love Moana. I have thoughts and feelings, and so this will be about that. I'm just going to let you check it out, but this is going to be, like, one of the many reasons that I think this movie is so cool, but also problematic. So check that out. And Mary should also have a blog post up,
about
which will be about
S-Town.
S-Town.
Podcast from This American Life.
And Serial.
And Serial. It's kind of confusing who's doing what now, because they're like, let's put everyone's name on it.
Serial has created their own production company called Serial
they're a
Productions.
Brand.
But Serial comes from This American Life, so...
Yes, it's very confusing. But
and the S-Town came from both of those.
I'm going... I've got a post about S-Town where I discuss mental illness and how S-Town sort of skirts around it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, yes, there will be blog posts. It will be awesome, you know, because you just, I mean, one podcast every 2 weeks is just not enough for you, and we understand that. So we're trying to give you content all the time. Yes,
and just so you know, we will be having podcasts every other week. We will be doing a full book review podcast, and then, like, there will be a week with nothing and sadness. Except there will be a blog post. And then there will be a week with a mini-sode about some random shit.
TBD.
I anticipate that when we say mini-sode, we really mean full-time, just not about a book.
No, it's going to be under 30 minutes because I swear to God, people, like, I cannot.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kelly has to edit all of,
like,
it,
if you guys so want to teach yourselves how to use,
we are zero help
band. And,
oh, no, that's okay. we'll just send you inspirational bitmojis.
And if it is over 30 minutes, I will cut the shit out of that. I will cut out entire chunks, and you'll have no say as to what gets kept. So be prepared.
And if you want
to
have a say, learn to use GarageBand.
I am guessing that anytime The Bachelor is mentioned, that shit's going to get cut.
No one heard what you just said, Emily, because I just cut it out.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh, though. Quick Bachelor comment. So on this week's Dancing with the Stars.
What?
They shut up. I'm getting there.
It's related.
It's related.
I thought you were about to say, quick Bachelor comment. Mary wrote a poem about Corinne.
Can I say my thing?
That's the mini-sode.
So on this week's Dancing with the Stars, the first commercial that I have seen for Rachel's season of The Bachelorette aired, and I am amped, and we're going to be talking about it a lot. Sorry, Kelly, but, like, we all want to marry Rachel. We love her.
Kelly, just watch it. You can watch this one because it's, you're going to see it from the beginning. It's the first woman of color, it's the first person of color to ever be a lead
also,
of the show.
Also, she's
this
a badass.
Important.
She's amazing. You will want to marry her, too.
She's an attorney, and she's beautiful, and she's smart, and she's hilarious, and
she's
I hope they pick good
the
dudes for her.
Yeah.
Kelly's just shut down.
Kelly, get the fuck on board.
Yeah.
It's less editing that you'll have to do if you're on board.
Yeah. Is just the most disturbing concept for a television show.
Exactly.
You're not wrong.
But that's why it's
good. And I just cannot.
No one's denying
that. I just can't. I can't.
I think you'll really like Rachel.
I can't like suspend my emotional turmoil that I feel every time I watch an episode of. And I have watched The Bachelor. I've watched plenty of episodes of it because my dad and my stepmom love The Bachelor and The Bachelorette and Bachelor in Paradise and all the things.
Is it time to talk about our pets?
Oh my gosh, a cat!
Oh my god.
There's a cat.
Okay.
A cat on the podcast.
So, all right. Yes, the cat has to be on the podcast. So maybe for our last thing we do on this episode, we should introduce our pets.
Our pets are going to play a crucial role in many episodes to come, so
our lives,
yeah, in our lives, so
and on the blog,
they're very cute. So someone start. I have to go retrieve Penelope.
Perhaps you just heard a small meow, and that was Petrina, one of my two cats. They don't get along yet, still. so they have to be separated, but Petrina is a young kitten, just, you know, about 15 months old.
why don't you tell them her full name, since we were talking about
her
cereal.
Name in honor of cereal. Her first name, Petrina, is from Dungeons and Dragons, a campaign I've played. But her full name is Petrina the Nisha Call Koenig.
Yes.
And that is on her collar.
What? It's on her collar?
And her birth certificate.
Yes.
Please.
And her driver's license.
I need a picture of that collar. Please put a picture of the collar on the box.
Yeah.
My other cat is Sir Edward B. Fluffytail.
Mm-hmm.
The B stands for Booba.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure where that came from or why.
Isn't there that show? Isn't there a
There was a show called Boobas. Yes. Yes.
And they were very frightening.
It's very disturbing. But I don't know. I just started calling him that one day. He's very large and fluffy.
Yes. There's someone here. Hold on.
Oh, I heard a gentle mew.
It's her.
I'm holding Penelope, my cat. She is 6 years old.
And oh,
she's
baby.
Very beautiful. She looks like a model. If she were a movie star, she would probably be Audrey Hepburn. If you just look at her.
Mm-hmm.
Very classic.
She's a classic beauty.
She could be a part-time model. Spend part of her time modeling and part of her time next to you.
Was that her?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Penelope.
She was saying, bitch, I could be a full-time model.
She
is what she was saying.
Oh, that's a sad meow. This is her desperate, please let me go meow.
Oh.
Okay. It's over.
So, I have two baby cats. I have Josie Monkey Puddingston. Sir Josie Monkey Puddingston. He's about 11 years old. A tiny, tiny baby. And then I also have Cercilia Lannister, Anastasia Lannister. And she's, what, like 2 now? That's crazy. She's a tiny, tiny, tiny baby. And they're hanging out in the other room because otherwise Cersei would be crawling all over me. And my microphone has cat hair all over it because she likes to rub on it. And so I just figured that wasn't good, like, podcasting.
And she would be like...
To have, like, cat rubbing.
Yeah. Yep. That's the noise she makes.
Yep. She likes to go... That's her sound. So those are my cats. Also, I have... My fiance is really into reptiles, so we have a ball python named George and a gecko named Scout.
Oh,
so we're a full house of animals.
A zoo. Mm-hmm. We yeah. bought a zoo.
Yes. We're Scarlett Johansson and Matt Damon.
Yeah.
Are those people in that movie?
Yeah.
Yes. We're those guys.
Yeah. Totally believable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't have any cats.
That's okay.
I know. I just, like, I feel, you know, like you let your one, like, dog friend.
No.
I have 3 dogs. I have my firstborn is a boy. His name is Roger. He's probably a pit bull mix. He's got a crooked leg from living on the streets before we had him. But he's very sweet and spoiled now. He goes to work with me a lot.
He has meetings, important meetings he has to go
yes.
to.
He goes to many important meetings. Mabel. We got Mabel so that Roger would have a friend because we thought that he was bored. And we found her on the internet. And Joe's my husband. Joe wanted a big dog. And Mabel's not big. She weighs 20 pounds. And at the time, she was even smaller because she was a puppy. But Joe saw her and said, well, we're getting that bitch. I don't care how big she is. And then we got
so
her.
Sweet. So sweet.
So she did become very good friends with Roger, but she did not like us at first. But now she does. She's fine.
Aww.
And then, kind of on a whim, we got this third one who turned out to be, like, almost 90 pounds. So she takes up a lot of space in our house, but it's
she's very cute.
We love
though.
Her. Her name is Hattie, and she has a lot of extra skin. She's adorable. Yeah, we got her when we were trying to go buy a Saint Bernard at the shelter, but it had already been adopted. So we thought, we'll just walk around, knowing full well we
can
were
never just walk around.
No,
we had already committed to getting this Saint Bernard that wasn't even there anymore. So we saw her, and in about a minute and a half, we were like, and we have 3 dogs now. So,
mm-hmm.
they're a little pack. Yeah, they have very different personalities, and some of those personalities are not allowed at the dog.
I have to say, I do have a favorite dog.
No!
Is it Mabel?
It's Mabel.
Of course it's Mabel. Mabel.
She just has
please
such
go
an
check out Mabel's
face.
Picture that should be on the website. She does have a very expressive face. She's cutie. She is our cutest dog.
Mary has also told me that she prefers the P to the C. So
that sounds like sexual stuff.
She prefers Josie Monkey Puddingston over Cercilia.
I prefer the C because the P hates me, and it is known.
No, the P doesn't hate
me. One time he growled at me and tried to hit me.
Well, that's just
oh, PB&P. Shit.
Slander.
That's just PB&P. Don't hate on my cat.
I love P. I just say I'm saying I have a favorite.
Okay.
Oh, I tried to get a cat. We have there's a cat that sort of lives next door and sort of lives on our porch. And I tried to make her live with us, and it did not work out. But she still sits on my porch a lot.
What an
and
angel.
I say hi to her.
We want pictures.
And the neighbors call her Prissy.
Ew.
No, that's gross.
But no. Her name is Ruth Bader Ginsburg Brown.
Oh, so, good.
Beautiful.
Well, send me a picture of her. Fun. She can be part of the squad, too.
Yeah.
Oh, she's adorable. She's all white. Aww. She's very pretty.
Yay!
All right, so we have a blog, as previously mentioned, / website, where you can find all of our podcasts, which is just this one, as of right now. but then our blog posts,
pictures,
contact information, pictures of baby pets, and us, if you care about that, mostly the pets are the important part.
Also, there will be a little calendar and list of upcoming books. So our book for next month, Kelly, do you want to say a little something about it?
Sure. Our book for next month is White Teeth by Zadie Smith. Yeah, that's all I'm going to say because I haven't started reading it yet and I know almost nothing about it other than
I started reading it.
It's been recommended to me by many a person. So
all right.
All of our listeners should start reading that
start
immediately.
Reading. Yes. We will have a podcast reviewing / discussing that book in approximately 4 weeks, a month. But in 2 weeks, look out for a mini-sode about a topic yet to be decided upon, possibly Beauty and the Beast that was thrown out there.
I could take up a whole full time.
You may not speak for 90 minutes about
there will be a 4-hour episode of just Mary talking about
Mary doing a monologue about Beauty and the Beast.
It's best to listen on a car trip somewhere.
So check us out at booksquad.inc. I-N-K, like ink that comes from a squid.
Or a pen.
Or a pen.